We sat there for what seemed like a very long time. There was a light knocking on the bus door, so I stood and moved to the front, where I could see the Cheyenne Nation standing on the other side of the glass. I opened the door, and he put a foot up on the first step. He spoke quietly. "You are not going to believe this. The Lady Morningstars are winning."
"You're kidding."
"No, they're not winning by much, but the defense has stepped up and they are maintaining a 4-point lead."
"That's great."
"Perhaps not for her." He glanced at Jaya, who leaned against the window, looking out. "Coach Felton does not want her on the bus when the players come out, no matter what the outcome."
I sighed.
"So she wants me to take her home?" "I am thinking yes." He glanced back at the gym. "I think she is taking advantage of the opportunity that you are here and have a vehicle."
"All right. What do we do about the bus?"
"I will stay here. They may need some assistance in escaping if they do pull off an upset."
"You bet."
I moved back down the aisle. "Hey, kiddo, it looks like you get to go home early. Come on, I'll give you a ride." Without saying anything, she pulled herself together and tugged her jacket tighter, thumbing the sling of her gym bag up on her shoulder and stepping down in front of Henry. I followed her, calling back to him, "I'll drop her off at Lolo's and see you at the cabin." He called back to me as he climbed aboard the bus. "Deal." Jaya slowed, and I stepped beside her, leading her to my truck, which was a couple hundred yards away. Her breath fogged the air in front of her as she trod forward, her head down.
"I haven't ever been kicked off a team in my entire life."
I withheld the comment about it being a relatively short life so far and just nodded.
"I'm not going to apologize."
"That's your prerogative, but I think your window to play high school ball is rapidly closing."
"Then what?"
"I'll just transfer."
"To where this late in the season?"
"Somebody will want me."
"Name one." "You've got a reputation, and it's not a good one."
"Then I just quit."
"Also your prerogative."
We approached my truck and I hit the fob, unlocking the doors. "Then what? The drive-through at the Dairy Queen?" She surprised me and snorted a laugh.
"Hey, I like Dairy Queen."
"I do too, just not as a lifelong career choice." I opened the door for her and she climbed in, tossing her bag on the floor mat. I closed the door behind her and heard a squeal. I figured my sidekick must have introduced himself. Pulling open the driver's side door, I climbed in and fastened my seatbelt, then watched her scratch his broad muzzle as he licked her cheek. "He came from up here on the rails. You two should get along." She buried her face in his thick neck.
"What's his name?"
Dog. She looked at me.
"You're kidding."
"No. When I got him, I didn't have a lot of enthusiasm for naming, so I just called him Dog. And it stuck." She studied me. "But your daughter and granddaughter have real names, right?"
"Yep, they do."
I started the big V10 and pulled out of the full parking lot, a little concerned, but figuring that if anybody could take on the entire Crow municipality of Lodgegrass, it would be Henry Standing Bear. We drove down the hill toward the interstate, and I took a left, heading north. Jaya continued to pet Dog, who finally hunkered there on the center console, where he buried his muzzle in her hair. Before long, they were both snoring. There was no other way to get to Lame Deer than to drive past the Little Bighorn battlefield and then to make a right onto 212 toward the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, the diagonal state route that stretched from the South Dakota border to where I now turned off at one reservation and headed for another. As I drove, I thought about what Detective Chuck Schultz, the investigator for the Yellowstone County Sheriff's Department, had said about the lonely strip of highway that straddled the two reservations and the number of women who had disappeared here. What could account for so many? Given we were talking about a geographic area approaching the size of Connecticut, with weather conditions that would make a Mongolian herdsman rush for cover. Still, I became aware of two vehicles behind me, maybe about 100 yards back. Nothing unordinary, but when I first saw them gaining on me, I slowed. They'd gotten within a couple of car lengths, but then had dropped back to follow at a more sensible distance, which is not an unusual response when drivers see the lights and stars on the doors. I continued at the speed limit as some more snowflakes darted across the beams of my headlights. Driving across the rolling hills of eastern Montana, I kept peering back at the lights behind me, keeping their distance but still there. After they hadn't turned toward Kirby or Busby, I figured they must have been going to Lame Deer as well. As we started climbing the high ridge outside of town, the closest vehicle pulled out into the opposing lane and passed me, a rattletrap of a white club cab Dodge that had writing on the sides I'd seen before, Alpine Painters. The other truck pulled in tight behind me just as the one in front slowed. For a moment I thought about just running into the Dodge, but then figured why damage my truck. Instead I slowed as they slowed, pulling into a turnoff almost at the top of the ridge. It was a wooded area and a pretty good spot for a highwayman to ply his trade, maybe even a couple of them. Gliding to a stop, I put the truck in park and flipped on my high beams, along with my emergency lights, the blue and red tracers spinning color under the pine trees that surrounded us, along with the truck in front and the one behind. Might as well give them the idea that the stop was at least partially mine.